Hello, and welcome to Season 2, Episode 3, the actual Episode 3 of Voices of the Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Ward, and today we have Kitty Martz joining us again to talk about peer mentor services. I hope you're all staying safe this holiday season. And remember, there is help out there at 1-877-MY-LIMIT. You can also go to vpgr.net to learn more about Voices of Problem Gambling Recovery. So here's Kitty with Voices, the podcast. Hi, Kitty.
Hey, Brian.
How are you?
I'm so well. Thanks for having me back.
Oh, so happy to have you back. So happy to have you back. There was a lot of excitement about your smart recovery episode. So can you kind of remind people of where you're coming from, where you came from, where you are now, and just kind of recap that from the episode 2?
Of course. Let me give you just kind of the 30-second version if I can. Okay. But I'm someone who is in long-term recovery, and not just from problem gambling disorder, but also alcohol use disorder. And I've just had a number of challenges over my life. I work a variety of different pathways in my own recovery. And eventually, my addiction culminated in me finding myself in inpatient treatment for my gambling in a place called Bridgeway in Salem, 8 or 9 years ago. And that's when I realized that I'm going to need to make a career out of keeping my recovery first. So I wanted to look for roles that would meet my needs just to survive. I wasn't planning to get rich in this career. I wanted to do something that was really meaningful and that I could connect face to face with people without having to go back to school and get another master's degree. So my counselor introduced me to this kind of work, and I found Voices of Problem Gambling Recovery and their 40-hour class, got trained, and I've been doing this for the last 6 years, several of which I've been doing with you, working alongside you, and it's changed everything.
Gotcha.
Because, okay, you know, you don't... Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
There's something about just bandwidth. We only have so much energy in a day. And I think we're all realizing that this super person, Superman or Superwoman, super mom, super dad, that we go to work and then go do our recovery activities and raise kids and keep the house up and do volunteer work. It's just too much for some people, including me. So if I can overlap things that nourish my values and keep me engaged in my community, and at the same time, that's my work of working in the mentoring field, I don't know, jackpot? Too right. Soon to say that?
Probably not. I don't know. I kind of want to jump right into it. This is a big program. It's something that's important to both of us. So I do want to get quickly into it. Let's talk about peer mentors, the peer mentor program. I want to start with asking, what are peer mentors?
Peer mentors are people who have lived experience with a particular challenge and have come out the other side of getting some peace with that. It could be a peer support specialist that works with folks with severe and persistent mental illness. There are forensic peers who work with folks that are in the justice system. There's substance use disorder and alcohol related peers. And like you and I, there's gambling disorder peers.
Gotcha. If somebody were interested in this, how would they go about obtaining one? What do they need to do to be able to get a peer mentor? And is there a cost affiliated with it?
Thank you. Plug right out of the gate. So the program you and I are affiliated with is called the HOPE program. And we're a subset of Voices of Problem Gambling Recovery. Our main supporters are the Oregon Health Authority and Multnomah County is where we get our funding as a nonprofit. And if someone wanted to engage in having a peer mentor, they would check us out at vpgr.net. That's Voices thisisaproblemgamblingrecovery.net or just call 503-486-7377. And there are some limitations on what group of folks, depending on where they live. Typically, Multnomah County in Oregon is who we can serve, but we can also recommend or figure some things out for people to find gambling mentors within the state of Oregon. That said, there's lots of ways to work with mentors through community mental health or substance use recovery programs. Often the bigger programs will have mentors on staff, and generally we're covered by, in our case, funding that exists to help people with gambling problems. So it's free to the person that receives services. In other fields, the mentor services can be billed to Medicare or Medicaid. So it's really quite affordable, if not free.
So how is being a mentor or having a mentor different than, say, having a sponsor from a 12-step program? And again, we're not looking to discredit that. In fact, one of the questions I have is, how well can that pairing work, having a sponsor and a mentor? Is there any contradiction in there?
Ah, yeah. So there's probably as many ways that sponsoring and mentoring are the same as there are that they're different. In terms of similarities, so welcome to have an individual to walk alongside us in our recovery path. And both a sponsor and a mentor can do that. They're sort of a wing dog, if you will, that helps guide and refer to resources and introduce folks around and help them feel connected. So important. A sponsor tends to have one school of thought. Most commonly, sponsors are found in 12-step groups, and their role is ideally to guide the individual through the 12 steps, though they tend to take on a number of other roles too. In the case of mentoring, we offer many paths, kind of a menu of services to choose from. So you and I know a little bit about smart recovery, and that's something we can offer to our mentees, is that curriculum and that resource of meetings to get connected with. But we're also familiar with, say, Gamblers Anonymous. I don't want to out you here, Brian. We know both programs, and so it becomes much more of a kind of, here's an a la carte menu, tell us what you're interested, and then it can be very mentee driven. To use a big word, egalitarian, like there's not a power differential between our peers. You're my peer because we work together and we both identify as people in recovery. Mm-hmm. And our clients, our mentees, are also our peers. So when it comes to, it's kind of like one of those holiday gatherings where there's a lot of like David Juniors and David the Third, we can be like, look around and go, yeah, I'm peer, but that's kind of nice about it too, isn't it?
Yeah.
Most importantly, I think there's kind of a risk mitigation, a professionalism that comes with mentors being supervised. There's very much a structure in place. There's requirements for our ability to stay certified. We receive close supervision and always have some guidance based on evidence-based facts in how to work with folks in a way that's going to show efficacy. And that's not to say that sponsoring can't be incredibly helpful. It's just a different way of doing things that's more about staying on one path with one program and pretty guided way of doing things. Does that sound like your experience too?
Yeah, it's a more concentrated effort. We're going to focus on getting through this program. Whereas with mentorship, it's a little more involved. It's a little more, you know, things like in mentorship, abstinence isn't a requirement. It may be a harm reduction. It's about meeting people where they are and helping them achieve their goals. Mm-hmm. And so, whereas 12-step sponsors have a very focused goal in mind, which is to help somebody work the steps and continue through that program, You know, that's something that mentors wouldn't offer. We would certainly be able to go to meetings with somebody, but we're not actually working the steps. That's not in our field of practice, but we are more like resource coordinators. If somebody needs help finding a living situation, that's something we can help with. The financial struggles, we can help them try to not only stay accountable, but stay safe. And so it's a little bit more of a wide breadth of services. Whereas, again, not taking anything away from sponsors, they can do amazing work, but it is a very kind of hyper-focused, at least, you know, ideally would be hyper-focused on the program. That's my thought on it. So how were you introduced to mentorship and services? Did you have a mentor? And if so, is that what piqued your interest? And if not, how did you come across the fact that peer mentors were a thing?
I did not have a mentor. And in fact, I was committed about 8 years ago when I first entered gambling recovery to make it my habit to do most anything that was suggested to me that made sense. Unless there was a good reason, I would give it an effort. And so I was pretty, as they say, quote unquote, compliant with my aftercare after being in inpatient treatment for my gambling. Mm-hmm. And I had a therapist who, I would describe their approach as very boundaried. They really modeled that a therapist is a safe place to self-disclose without there being any quid pro quo of the therapist asking me into their personal world. So to give an example of what that would be like, I would come in for an appointment and say, hey, how are you doing? And the therapist would say, good, how are you? And I would say how I was, and then say, how was your week? And they would say, is that important to you of how my week was? And tell me right. more. And I was like, you know what? I was just making chit chat, man. Like, okay. Clearly, this is about me, and that's welcome to have the focus be on me. But I think I also needed fellowship, peers. Yeah. So that was a missing part of it. Fortunately, one of the counselors where I had been an inpatient had stayed in touch and knew about Voices of Problem Gambling Recovery, and that this training was offered, that I would be able to take the training and even look for a job once I got certified when I had 2 years of abstinence. I took a 40-hour class. I didn't need a college degree or student loans, or I didn't have to take a final exam or anything. So it was really quite an easy transition, being someone who sponsored folks in 12-step programs, to say, hey, I enjoyed being a helper like that. And I had wished I would have had a helper like that. And so this is something I'm going to try for a while. And now I very much think of it as a career. I'm not looking to grow into kind of like now I'm going to go be an addiction psychologist or something. It's not a stepping stone. This is the kind of work I like doing.
Yeah. The hands-on, you know, kind of out in the field, less clinical approach and more lifestyle connection.
Totally.
There's something to be said about being able to say, go to a yoga class with a mentee because they want to get in better shape or they want to take better self-care, and being mm-hmm. able to go do that with somebody mm-hmm. is really rewarding. And it really does lead to some pretty special bonds, you know, mm-hmm. And you guys can kind of feed off of each other. So that's great. And speaking of that, what does the future of mentoring look like? I mean, you know, we can talk a little bit about COVID here in a minute, but as we're kind of transitioning out of it and vaccines have become available to certain demographics, what does the future of mentoring look like to you and to the program?
Oh gosh, if I had a crystal ball, we might not be here. It's funny because of my gambling problem. But I do think about how things are shifting in addiction. I'm seeing a lot more transparency to reduce stigma. There's folks like you that come out and do a podcast and talk openly about the struggles you went through. And I've always had that be my policy too, that I'm going to build a life around saying, this is a neurological issue that happened to me and I'm doing everything I can to fix it. But I want to invite people to be able to say that they're going through difficult things with addictions and seek out services. And I think we're going to continue to do that. Sadly, with COVID, there has been really a lot of damage, and that's to community support groups that have taken, I don't know, 80 years. I mean, AA started back in what, like the 30s. It took a while for all the folks to find those groups and show up and create an infrastructure that people could come to in person. And it's going to take a while to rebuild all of that. I see funding for treatment services possibly shifting, and I would love to see it shift in a way that keeps, as they say in sports, like the money on the field, that people like you and I that work for an agency like ours can keep it pretty lean with low overhead and low bureaucracy. If someone called us, Brian, and said, I need help with my gambling problem, we would stop what we're doing now and go talk to them. Or within an hour, wouldn't we? We would be there. Yeah. So we can serve people in a immediate, effective way. There's going to be more studies, and we're fortunate in our agency to work with Dr. Jeff Murata, who consistently gathers data from us on the efficacy of working with peers. We're affiliated with a program called MAPS, the Metro Area Association of Addiction Peers, that regularly does studies on wages. I'd like to see wages increase so people can make more of a career of this when we're averaging just a little bit above minimum wage for what people are making a career. That's concerning. And especially when it's part-time or there's not a lot of benefits, folks really can't afford to work in this very needed field until the money comes from the powers that be. So I'll continue doing advocacy for that kind of thing. I don't know, what do you see in terms of the future of mentoring?
So one hope that I have is to be able to build out this network to include, you know, culturally specific mentors, somebody that, you know, if there is a, if there's a specific culture that is in need, which there are many cultures that are in need of these services right now, even here just in the Portland metro area, to be able to guide them in a way of understanding and empathy that, you know, I myself as a cis white male wouldn't have, to have those kinds of services available that can be culturally driven and culturally specific, I think would be a huge benefit. And, you know, one of the things that we're running into is, okay, well, how do we do that? And again, since it's not my lived experience, I don't have all those answers. It's just what I would like to see happen. You know, part of what that means is just getting something like a pilot program of getting somebody through the door to become a mentor, and seeing the benefit of it to be able to branch it out again for other mm-hmm. cultures. So, mm-hmm. And
can I jump in that? I think that that's one of the really smart things about the nonprofit we work for at Voices mm-hmm. is that they saw that our being able to be kind of adaptable hours wise, and centralized, for, a number of providers in the Portland, Oregon metro area. So it's difficult to be able to afford a full-time mentor for each program, especially out in rural areas that may just have a few clients that need help, but nonetheless do need help. If we're able to serve a wider cast net across the state. And that's especially true now that we're doing more telehealth and meeting with folks online. That's wise. So as much as COVID has thrown a wrench in so many things, it's also helped us adapt to be able to meet the needs of people who otherwise might not be able to benefit from mentor services.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because that was actually the next talking point, which is the effects of COVID, you know, on peer mentorship services, on, you know, what are the limitations that of services that we can provide, because that certainly is an impact. But also, what are some of the benefits that we're seeing? And that's definitely one of them. The idea that, mm-hmm. you know, we can keep people engaged with, you know, telehealth and video conferencing, maybe not it to the degree that we once could, mm-hmm. or at least in the depth that we once could. But the fact that we're still able to reach out and engage with people is pretty miraculous. And I'm thrilled that those options are available. And it really does create opportunity for future planning. So
it's changed. I don't know about in your caseload, but I find that I used to do stuff with people, if that was go to a bill pay place or do banking with them on payday, or even kind of sports or things to get feeling good again. It was very experiential. We had a craft group, and as much as I'm missing being able to offer those things to folks while we're in safety first COVID space. Mm-hmm. There's also a connection that happens by my being able to text someone daily, every other day, talk on the phone for 15 minutes a couple times a week, where recovery is happening on real time, not just that one set once a week, prepare for it, meet up, have the connection and leave. So it's very much how mentoring was probably designed, to kind of be in the life as being lived sort of realm. And I'm enjoying that too. I think that's been nice to see that shift happen. There's a lot more challenges with COVID. There's been an increase in relapses and substance use disorders, opioid overdoses. There's been record liquor sales in Oregon, where we have recreational marijuana. There's been a huge increase in sales in marijuana. And we even now have gambling online, sports programs, and people can gamble offshore. And boy, those are a volatile combination, to have the stressors of COVID, the financial issues, the political climate. People are struggling right now, and it's kind of a precarious situation to have the dangers associated with increasing addictive behaviors in the same time of all these stressors. So pretty important to have folks like us with the ability to be out there in the community, talking with people about what resources are available and helping them get into services.
And then, you know, we get people into services, and, you know, I touch base on kind of growing the network a little bit, but say somebody wanted to become a mentor themselves. Of course, they're interested in services, they go through it, they love it. What kinds of things does it take to become a mentor? What's that process like?
Probably different for every state. I'm better equipped to talk about gambling mentoring, specifically in Oregon. Mm-hmm. And that would involve maybe just shooting us an email at bpgr.net's contact page. You could leave a message at the phone number I listed, 503-486-7377. And we will arrange for the next class, which will be in person. And I don't know, maybe this spring. It's a 40-hour class, 3 days of it in person, 2 days of it online that you complete digitally. We require 1 year of abstinence from gambling before taking the course, and then you'll be able to be certified by the Mental Health Accreditation Board of Oregon for the low cost of $100. That does not guarantee a working position as a gambling mentor. Mm-hmm. but does qualify you to be able to apply for jobs and bill for those services. That said, you can also become, if you're in substance use disorder, alcohol use disorder, recovery, a certified recovery mentor. And those classes are offered at a number of places, including college campuses. Daystar, located here in Portland, offers one class. There's one coming up soon. I think it's about $400 for the 40-hour class. And there's some overlap. If you have co-occurring substance use disorder and gambling, there's a way to kind of combine them. Similar for peer support specialists and recovery coaches. So it's pretty accessible to be able to get that certification. Yeah.
I mean, that's it as far as like the talking point questions that I had. Is there any follow-up, anything that I haven't touched base on, that we haven't touched base on, that you want to kind of drive home?
Well, I think there's a number of things that I think about in terms of challenges with being a mentor. One is that historically, people with lived experience can be kind of marginalized. And we were just starting to see that evolve, that we were being given a seat at the table for behavioral health. So I would like to see that continue. I worry when I hear that there's more kind of regulatory structure coming in where, say, we would have to become licensed as mentors, or that we would have a more stringent criminal background check. Having criminal background is somewhat part and parcel with being an individual that's been through struggles. So if we were to just negate that whole demographic of folks that have very rich lived experience in their struggles, that would be quite a disservice to future peers. I think I also want to say, Brian, that addiction is coming at us hard right now. And of all the changes we've had to make in 2020, I could see that this could be an amazing movement of folks like you and me, and folks that have come out the other side of addiction, that go, this gives my life meaning. You know, we need three things to be happy in life. We need something to do, which this has been incredibly meaningful for me, to have something to do that helps ease other people suffering with their addictions. We need someone to love. And I know I can speak for both of us that we just thoroughly enjoy seeing our mentees find peace in their lives, that it's just an honor to have that deep connection. And we need something to look forward to. We need hope. And I think of that as part of a mentor's role, is to be a little bit of a hope machine and say, look, I know I was in a similar place and things were rough and they get good again. So come with me, walk alongside me. We're going to get there together. It's going to be okay. And I just really like to invite people that are listening to consider if there isn't a place for doing mentoring in their life, and to pursue getting certified and seeking out opportunities to serve like this.
Well, Katie, I want to thank you again for coming here. I do value your time and I want to be mindful of it, but having you here is always such a joy. And, you know, obviously people love Katie. So I do want to go on record. I've done it at other presentation kinds of things, but, you know, I think I'm safe to say that I had Katie as a mentor early in my recovery, and the amount of compassion and empathy, and those are two different things, that I was shown that early in recovery was really a turning point for me in seeing my own personal value. Having somebody there that recognizes it, and like Katie was saying, on a day-to-day basis, being able to reach out and be like, hey, you're valuable, you're worth it, really was, if nothing else, beaten into my head. And so, Katie, I can't thank you enough for the work that you did, that you continue to do. I have firsthand experience of the benefit of it, and it is what made me decide that I wanted to do it myself and get certified. So, I love you, Katie, and I'm so happy to know you.
I love you too, Brian. I'm thinking of that picture of Bob, Dr. Bob and Bill W., where that man is sitting on the bed. Do you remember that picture from kind of 12-step yes. folklore? Uh-huh. Yeah, and the inscription is something like Dr. Bob saying, if you and I are going to get sober, we better get busy together. Mm-hmm. I'm paraphrasing there, but it's something that's really helped my life to get to do this and to get to do this kind of thing with people like you. So thanks for being in my life and thanks for having me.
Yeah, no worries. All right. Talk to you later, Kitty.
Bye, Brian.
Bye. Again, I want to thank Kitty for joining us on Voices the Podcast. And if you do have a need for peer mentor services, you can look up the HOPE program at vpgr.net. And with this episode, we close out the year 2020. It's been a crazy year. And once again, I hope that you're able to be safe. So we look forward to seeing you in 2021. And have a safe new year. From Voices, the podcast.